Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.
Hello and welcome to the discussion, which is part of the Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series brought to you by the Nordic Council of Ministers. And we are discussing about the rural areas and what is happening with the rural areas. My name is Olavi Petro and I'm working in the Ministry of Rural Affairs of Estonia. And I'm dealing with the problems of rural areas day to day, and then we are kind of trying to struggle to find out what the people want and why they are trying more to go to the cities. So I'm really happy that I'm joined here by a team of really excellent people who know a lot about rural areas. Some of them are living in rural areas and some of them are studying them very much. So they know about the rural areas much more than I do. But maybe our participants can introduce themselves and also to say a few words what how they are connected to the rural areas. So we start with Tanel Tang. You are also from Estonia like I am, and you are living in an island.
Yeah, hi, my name is Tanel and thank you for inviting me here for this discussion. I think I am the least professional here, taking consider of all the backgrounds, but I have been working in many sectors, in public sector, in private sector, in startup and so on. Everything has always been connected to the farming and rural areas. And about 2 years ago, I moved back to my home island, Saaremaa, and now living in the countryside in the village, which has more or less 100 people living there permanently.
Okay, very well. So you are the person who knows in the first hand what is happening in the rural areas. And I'm really happy also we have two researchers from the Nord Regio. First, Karen Revskard and then Alberto Giacometti. Maybe we can start with Karen. How do you know what is the rural areas and what's happening there?
I have my own background is within the rural area in Denmark. I lived in a rural area in Iceland. I studied a lot on rural areas in Norway. And I'm now back in the rural area in Denmark and taking part in the local community. But in my work, I'm the head of research at Nord Regio. We are an institute that works on regional issues within the Nordic Council of Ministers. And we could say we have three sort of geographical areas we focus on. It's the rural areas, it's the urban areas, and it's sort of the more overall regional innovation focus. And we have a large program from the Nordic Council of Ministers as well. So we have a lot of research projects. Alberto, my colleague, has worked a lot both on regional and now also rural issues.
Thank you very much. This is really a wide knowledge about rural areas. But last but not least, Alberto Giacometti, we have discussed that you have a very global experience from a personal point of view.
Yes, indeed. Both in my blood and in my sort of career, I was born and raised in Ecuador from an Ecuadorian Italian family. I've been living in Ecuador in the high Andes, close to the capital in the city, but also close to a farm in the outskirts of the city. Then I've been living in a very small town in South Italy. I've been living in middle-sized cities in the Netherlands and now in Stockholm for over 7 years. And I wouldn't consider myself either rural or urban, but rather I have a strong connection to both since my early childhood.
Okay, so we have a very wide knowledge of the local Nordic situation, but also the global trends. And speaking about global trends, we know that the urbanization is going on, and probably it's something which we cannot stop, at least not very very fast. And the question is, if people want to go to the cities, maybe we shouldn't bother. Maybe it's okay. So, is there a problem with urbanization and with rural areas going empty, or is it a problem or is it not a problem? How do you see it? Maybe we can start with Karen.
Well, I don't like the words "we cannot stop it" or the sentence. I think we can. I mean, if you look over time and these. The development has been ongoing for for millenniums, and we don't know where we're heading. And we are now in a very, the whole issue around people placement, job studies is changing. I think we're in a kind of a momentum. And I do think that we've had some decades or maybe even centuries where we have seen a lot of focus on that, or the thought of that innovation, that the big ideas, they happened in the urban areas. I would say it's a myth. I mean, it has a lot to do with that you put where you put your resources, where you put your investments. And you can take European policies. A lot of the latest policies, let's say the smart specialization, that has also had the focus of, especially very much the focus on that innovation happens in agglomerations. And we have established in, let's say in Denmark, for example, you go to cities to study, you establish your life there, you get networks, you maybe get a family. In that way, you establish yourself in the urban area. When I lived in Norway, you could say that they have had a period during the 70s, 80s, where they established a lot of colleges in the rural areas more, with the incentive to get young people to study out there. And also in that, we have to remember, like our Danish Prime Minister actually said in her opening speech 2 days ago, that it's about lifelong learning these days. I mean, there's lots of things to learn. So for the young people, it's maybe not only to have a study when you're 20 to 25, it's also when you're 35, when you establish a family. And therefore, I think a lot of the issues also around where do you establish your educational institutions, for example, universities, colleges, etc. Yeah,
Alberto, do you
the work to Alberto?
Mm-hmm. Do you agree that we can reverse the process?
Well, I wouldn't want to be overly optimistic. I mean, it's not that from one day to another the trend is going to turn around and people are going to move to the countryside, even if all of a sudden there will be jobs. I mean, there's many reasons why people move to cities. Of course, this started from also a change in the economy. We moved from a more agrarian economy to an industrial economy and then to a service economy. But it's not just the job that brings people to cities. There's many other things, which is the dynamism, the proximity, the innovation, as Karen is saying. But that doesn't mean that that it can always be like that. There's many structural reasons that make people stay in cities. I mean, if we think about innovation can also happen in rural areas. So what could occur in rural areas to boost innovation? For instance, right now we have a huge opportunity with a big global coalitions to move towards a more circular economy. The rural areas provide enormous opportunities to build that different kind of economy. So the question would be whether we can build that culture of innovation or atmosphere of innovation in rural areas. But it's not just going to happen. It needs to be facilitated, of course.
Yes, I'm personally like to be very optimistic as well. And Tanel is here as a good example of the reason for optimism, as he has been moving from cities to rural areas. What are the biggest obstacles or concerns when you make the decision as a young professional to finish everything and then move to the countryside?
Okay, I think one of the biggest concerns, I think maybe everybody as my age is, okay, if I decide to move to the countryside, will there be any job for me? Because I need income to feed my family, to have a house on my head and or a roof on my head. And all this, so the biggest question is it possible to get any job? Or the other option is to get to make your job yourself, so start the business. I have done the second part. I have started the business, and not in an easy area, that is agriculture. So I'm producing organic eggs now. But what I see now in the countryside is that there are businesses, there are local governments that actually want young people to come to that area and work there. Even if you're not specialized in this area, but if you are ready to learn then they have a job for you. So I think this may be the biggest concern, of course, at thought when you start thinking about it, moving to countryside.
Yes, and when you are living where you are living, what are the tendencies you see around you, whether people are doing the same like you are doing, or are they moving away? Yes.
Well, it is kind of interesting that, of course, I believe the trends and the numbers are saying that cities are getting bigger and bigger and the countrysides are getting emptier. But at least the village where I am, there is no house without the smoke. This means that there is no empty house there, just rotting away. We just had one house for sale 1 or 2 months ago. Usually the sales period of countryside house is half a year or even more. But this house was now sold quite fast, with 1 month or so, and it was quite expensive. If you take the condition of the house, so in my area, I would have to say that I see more and more young people coming to the countryside, and as I've heard, COVID has influenced this a lot because people cannot enjoy cities anymore, but they can enjoy nature and all this. So.
Yes. But what do you think is then the structure of the demographical structure of the rural areas changing now?
Yeah, of course we see that usually old people lived in the countryside. As we know, grannies and grandfathers, everyone visits them and they live there. But now I see more and more that young people are moving there with the families and children. Of course, it's interesting also that I think 10 or 20 years ago or even more, poor people lived in the countryside because it was more cheaper. You made your own wood to heat the oven and of course, water was free and everything like that. But now I see that if you want to move to the countryside, you need to be wealthier than average person, so to say, because you need to renovate the old house and need to get all the comfortable things that you have in the cities. But, of course, the banks won't give you the loan because it's a high risk. Nobody will buy this house if something happens.
You just said that everybody's all the houses are going really fast. So what is the problem with the banks then?
Banks are not able to see this. So I think, of course, if you take the numbers, I think the number of houses that are being sold is like maybe 1% of all the real estate deals that are happening in the city. So but the banks just look at the numbers and say, look at their Excel and say, oh, this is not working.
So probably this is a problem that the banks see that in some areas like in Saaremaa, which is really a nice place in Estonia, and people want to go there, then in the other parts, the rural areas are really emptying. And I want to turn to our researchers with a question. What is actually the problem when the people go away from the rural areas? If they want to go to the cities, it's maybe it's okay, but why should we bother? What is the problem with the rural areas when there are no people? The more we can do the agriculture, one can say, yeah?
It's a bit of a big question, but it's also very, I mean, if you want, let's take a step back and look at Norway 100 years ago, which was one of the poorest area in Europe, poorest countries. Now it's the richest country. And what have they done? Well, they have made good structures so that people could earn an income into the rural areas. And they owned the resources out there. They owned the water. They owned the right to the fishing. They owned the farms. They own the ability to produce aluminium and the processing industry. So they keep their population in the rural areas, and they made a lot of the innovation and the development in these rural areas. And they are thriving. And these days we can see Italians, Germans, Dutch people going to the northern peak of Norway. They want to see the whole of that country because it's beautiful. But let's say we had moved all the, like we had another, they have had another policy and it would have become urbanized in the same way as other countries, then you would have it filled with forests and no people. So then where would people go? I mean, you will close small villages, and then you'll create it all into national parks. There will be no places for people to recreate, and there will be not be a sustainable management either of the resources, whether it's forestry or fisheries. I think it's, of course, we need the young people in the rural areas to create, come in with new ideas, to ask critical questions, to create new jobs as you do, Tanel, and to have them to contribute to a lively society with small children, with large families, to have schools, to have a grocery store, to have a livable community. I just wanted to also to reflect a bit on the issue around the houses. I think there's a push factor, of course, these days, because the housing policies and also the Nordic countries has made it that the house prices in the cities have increased very much, and that has increased the differences between rural and urban areas. So it's pushing also the normal population out of the center of the cities. On the other hand, they also get attracted. We are in a time where sustainability trends, people want more closer connection to food production or to recreation in a more rough sense they want. And one of the problems we also see in many of the Nordic countries is this investments still in housing in urban areas. We built up the cities, we've taken away the slums, thank goodness for that, since the beginning of the 80s, also in the Nordic countries. Now it's the rural areas that lack a lot of investment in housing. And it's true, it's also true in Denmark, it's very hard to get loans for housing in or to upgrade houses in rural areas. And that's deemed important if you want the young people to come out, that they have the right type of housing. Also, small rental flats available for people who do not have a lot of high income.
Yes, I think it's absolutely, I can agree with you that to turn the trend is much more difficult than to kind of stop it or mitigate it. But we can come back to the sustainability trend and the possibilities on the rural areas. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to ask from Alberto as well, because I know you're, one of your research areas has been the resilience of rural areas. What are the threats with the rural areas on your experience when people go away?
Yeah, I mean, of course, connecting to what is the problem, because it really depends who you ask, you might get very different answers. And city enthusiasts would say, well, cities are thriving, let the rural areas die. What's the problem? I mean, you have the opportunities, everything is in the city. Why bothering keeping the rural areas? But there is indeed a risk factor. I mean, you're concentrating all the people in urban areas, assuming that that you will have always those jobs there, that you will always have those opportunities there. But history tells us that things are not always like that. The economy goes up and down, certain sectors and industry goes up and down, and lots of people can lose their jobs all of a sudden. And being in the city, you're subject to the speculative market of the labor market, high rents. It's tough to survive in cities, whereas rural areas offer many, many good opportunities for decent, good quality jobs, more affordable living, and so on. An issue that we have seen in one of our resilience studies is that Sweden, for instance, has a very high dependency of food imports from other countries. If we don't have enough food production in Sweden, and I don't know, something happens with the supply chains and we stop importing food, it's really a risk factor for Sweden, for the Nordic countries. I mean, that applies for many industrialized countries, that they have high dependence on imports. Then, of course, many rural areas are lacking enough labor, actually. So it's not true that there is no jobs in many cases. There is an enormous demand for certain jobs, and it's not just farming jobs. I mean, that's also another myth, that people in rural areas work in farming. There is often the case, it's the majority of people do not work in farming, work in services of many kinds. And there is often a lack of skill jobs to take those skilled people to take those jobs. And so, yes, indeed, it's a problem for the local population is not to be able to access certain services and so on. We've been looking at some cases where they are looking to hire retired people to take again teaching jobs, like teachers in schools or nurses in the local clinics or hospitals, because there's not enough people to take those jobs. So that is a risk factor for the resilience of the local populations. That's just a couple of examples.
Yes. So, but then it shows that the governments and the businesses they should try to accommodate the people who want to go to the countryside. And I would like to take up the sustainability trend what Karen mentioned, which is a possibility. And also in Estonia, we saw when the pandemic started, we saw a really nice picture of mobile internet usage spreading around the country. So everybody was fleeing from the countries, from the cities, and then going to the countryside, working as much as possible from the home offices. And this was a really kind of sign of hope that people still behave like we think they should, that they want to go to the countryside and work there. The only thing is a structure, how to enable them. And what is the main driver, what we can do, what governments can do, and what businesses can do? Because I liked very much the phrase what Alberto, you said the other day, that earlier we had the jobs going to the people, but now the people going to the jobs, but now we see that the jobs are tending to go where the people are, and if people want to go to the countryside, then everything is moving this way. So what are the new trends which the governments and businesses can do, and how should we communicate it?
First of all, we have a large EU Horizon project where we work on the input for new rural policies, and we get input from rural representatives, Denmark and Finland for one, but later on also Sweden and Estonia. So you will be involved in that project from 2023. Anyhow, some of the things that we are discussing there very much is, of course, and also in other projects, is of course the green transition and the role of the green transition. And that includes, of course, a lot of different things depending on the country. But whatever it is, I mean, there is a lot of resources, a lot of bioresources, and a lot of human resources connected to these bioresources, whether it's agriculture, forestry, or fisheries in the rural areas. And the farmers or the fishermen or the foresters, they know to handle and manage the resources. And there we are seeing a lot of innovation in agriculture, for example, where the digital world is, so to say, really changing how you can do things. You deal with precision farming. You deal with new types of crops. We don't want to import proteins from Brazil anymore. We want to produce our own proteins, or we want to do them from grass. That's when the agriculture. We also see that there is a lot of new types of products in the green transition, and new types of processes, where we can make everything from the bioresources, which we earlier made from the fossil. We can make pharmaceuticals, we can create energy, we can create textiles, we can create building materials. And these things together with saving energy, with using the waste material, for example, in clusters or industrial symbioses that we sometimes call them when businesses work together, that provides a lot of opportunities and a lot of new types of jobs as well. So within this, there is a lot of things happening at the moment and a lot of needs for new types of jobs, a lot of new types of opportunities for young people. And with that also comes the need for looking a lot into that you have the opportunities for cooperation between businesses and educational institutions so they can get practice jobs in the industries where they get connected to, and then they keep them in the area instead of them moving away. So one strategy to sort of keep the young people in the rural area. And of course, there's another case where they have, from Denmark, where they have made agreements with both a humanistic university and social sciences together with the technical university, which is on the island of Lolland in Denmark, or is it Falster, which is most remote. They're at the moment building a tunnel to Germany, the Fehmarn connection. That has suddenly changed the whole geography of Denmark, because now it's becoming a booming area, new types of jobs, a lot of engineers, a lot of people working on networks collaboration. And then they're now located part of these two universities down there, so they can get students to a very rural area, which are into humanities and engineering, to get jobs and settle in the area.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. There are a lot of examples experiences to draw in the Nordic areas. I think that was a very, very good example of that. But Tanel here is already a producer of ecological production eggs, and I think you don't have to be turned to green anymore. But as we know, there are a lot of problems as well, especially how to get the revenue from the market for these products. So what do you think? Why did you choose to go to the ecological, and what do you think are the most biggest problem to get the things on the market and opportunities?
Yeah, this of course this organic business is still starting to boom. Hopefully in Estonia, I know the other countries, it's already a big thing, and there is basically no other way only to get organic food that is sustainable and that is healthier, of course, for humans and animals and all the nature. And also this organic market is very at the beginning of this road. And I know this new EU policy is from fork to farm to fork, which is also giving new opportunities to just people like me or just producers like me to reach out to the customers directly. So this, hopefully, let's see what it comes up. And but I tend to use every bit of it as possible. But if you come back to the other question, what could be the trends and things that will move people to go on, to live in the countryside? Is for me especially, it was the need of something, or the something was pushing me. So usually if you are in need of something, you will change yourself, or you change your environment where you are living in, or do some change to get this goal or needs satisfied. So working in the cities, it's very tense, because the environment itself around you is very tense, stressful, and you don't have you're all the time running with the time. A race that you don't have a time, and this makes it stressful, and some of the people are burning out. So they see that, okay, that's enough for me. I will change my career, and usually this is pushing people out of the city, so go to countryside, because the nature is so relaxing. Even if I do some intense job, I will go outside, walk. There is beautiful forest, beautiful fields, and all this. So this will relaxes me a lot, and I see other people moving into the countryside or rural area. That is one main reason. Of course, the children can play in the dirt and everything like this. So I think the environment itself is in some point pushing the people out of this city. What I could recommend to do is like push harder, so the people will break down easily and move to the countryside. It's not a good example, of course, but this is where I think maybe one point where we can see that people are moving to the rural areas.
So. Yeah, but still we see that the cities are not pushing, but they are pulling as well. The people still tend to go to the cities. Alberto, do we have some real evidence that people really wants to go on the rural areas?
I cannot claim to know all the trends by heart, but Of course, there is a duality. I mean, it would be naive to think that people just want the rural area. I mean, I was telling my own background. I have always had these link to city and link to the countryside, and I can enjoy them as much and access them as much as I can. So I think it's not necessarily about convincing people that rural areas are nice. I think many people do, and many people go whenever they can, but they don't necessarily go for living, or at least not permanent living. So the question here would be, what would make people make that choice? Why would people decide to move to rural areas? And so maybe we need to think a little bit more about all the aspects of life that have nothing to do with work, for example, that make people want to be in a place. So if we can bring also cultural activities, if we can also bring accessibility, good internet connection, various other things that make people be in cities, but why would that bring also people to the countryside? So I think now with the more flexible work that has emerged with the pandemic, and perhaps was a trend that was already ongoing before, we see a lot of people who choose to be in a second home for part of their time in rural areas. So they are not giving up necessarily their flat in the city, but they still go to the rural areas for part of that time. That can have many positive effects on the local economy, like they may consume more in the area, but it's also problematic, of course, if people are still paying taxes in the city or not formally registered in the rural areas, because then, of course, the local municipalities don't have the finances to cover the services for a larger population that is not accounting for.
Yeah, I think it's a very good contribution to the discussion. I think the trick is that we have to live in a synergy with cities and rural areas. And I think, Tanel, your markets are in the cities.
Of course, because a lot of people are there. But we can see that cities are trying to be more like rural areas, because a lot of these green areas are pushed more into the city planning. They want to get rid of these cars and everything. They want to walk there. And so they try to be a bit more like rural areas. But of the rural areas, they want to be a bit more like cities, because they want to have good roads, good lighting on the roads, and good playgrounds and all this. So maybe in the future, there is one good place that it's not rural or city, but it's just area that is more... In some cases, it's more intense, but in some places, it's not so intense living.
Yes, is this something which is happening in the Nordics, or is it happening globally? Is there a difference with the trends in Nordic and global trends?
In particular, on the greening of cities?
Or the urbanization as such?
To some extent, I mean, maybe we are lucky in the Nordics. I mean, we have... I mean, what we are discussing now, I think we are talking a bit about the people with resources that can afford to thrive. I mean, we have had a lot of problems in the Nordic countries. We have a lot of areas with poorer people in the outskirts of cities, immigrants, a lot of conflicts. And we also have to think about this when we talk about multi-locality and we can work two places or several places, multi-locality. There's also a lot of people who cannot do that. One of the big issues is really to think about who is going to be the people living in the cities in the long run and in the rural areas, because of the housing policies and the housing markets, because they have really increased the differences between the populations. So we also have to remember to get all the groups on board when we are just discussing these issues. And we have seen some quite successful stories. I want to turn back a bit to the entrepreneurship and co-work, because it's also right that we need good recreational areas, but still jobs matter quite a lot for most people. And you, as far as I can see your channel, you have really shown the case of an entrepreneur in a rural area. And going back to history, we saw a lot of these cases. And what made it a success was, of course, that local authorities, they can help to create good spaces for entrepreneurship. They can, that doesn't cost them much. They can help to facilitate networks that facilitate good areas for developing small businesses to get people to meet both from outside and from the area. There's a lot, and they can also invest themselves in local businesses. They have these opportunities in that way, attracting entrepreneurial young people. And what also I wanted to say then, that we also seen some good cases at Norwegian. We worked on integration of immigrants in the labor market. And we've seen some quite good stories where foreigners, non-white ethnic Europeans have got quite successful in the rural areas, in the labor markets, because they are part of smaller communities where you sort of, you're not looked at in the same way as you are in a city when you're part of a small community. You have your children in school and you shop in the same shops. You get to know people more closely. I think also we have to remember that that's part of what we call social capital, and that these things also are, they are maybe the more characteristics of smaller communities, because you have to act and behave and you get to know people. And that's one of the things we have at least heard, that some of the families who move out from the cities, they really want to be part of a local community. They want to see that they can do something, that it's not fulfilling in the city. And I think that's what we see sometimes. That's what is successful and what's difficult to do in the cities. And that's what they maybe try to do in also, because they want green areas and small communities in the cities. But it's harder because you can always become more anonymous.
Is it so in your case as well, Tanel? Is a rural community more kind of together?
Of course, this is what I saw in my case, is that when I lived in the city, we had a small house there, 12 apartments or 10 or 12 apartments together. But the only thing that we did with neighbors is if they come to us at corridor, we say hi, and that's it. But now in the village, in the 100 people village I live in, basically I know every one of them. I more or less regularly communicate some of them, and all the time where we see each other, we have a small chat, you know, how they're doing and so on. And we have some events going on. So I see that even though you are in the city, a lot of people there, you are totally anonymous. But in the countryside, you are an individual person that everyone can see and contact you. And so everybody's very friendly in the rural area. This is where I come to.
Yes, but it's also a obstacle in a city that some people want to be anonymous. So what about you, Tanel? Do you plan to keep living in the countryside, or you plan to come to the city sooner or later?
Right now, all the beds are on the rural area, the countryside, so the life is so much better there. I don't feel the need of anything there that's missing. If I want to go to the cinema, I can go to the city, drive 30 minutes there. And even when I was living in the city, I was living in the center of the city, but if I was driving to work, I also drive like 20 or 30 minutes, but it's more stressful. But now if I drive to my farm, It's maybe 10 or 15 minutes, but the distance is, of course, longer, but the time is the same. And if I want to go to friends with a cafe or do whatever things, I can do them just as easily. But when I go to the home, I have so relaxed environment there, and there are no noisy neighbors or smoking neighbors there. Also, it's a big issue, so... I will not go to back to live in a city, as if something, of course, drastically happens, but still, I'm not planning.
Yeah, I know that you had a very positive, drastic event lately in your life. You had a child. Yeah. Well, what about when she or he, I
don't know, she, yeah.
when she wants to go to school? Do you have a school?
We have, in 10 kilometers, we have a small school there. But if she wants to go to high school, of course I can drive her to the city, no problem. And I believe she needs to go to live in the city and even in foreign countries maybe to get the experience. And hopefully she will get to miss this rural area at some point and move back. But this is her decision in the future. So
you are in Estonia now. Denmark has had a very high change in the structure of the farms. I mean, we've gone from 100,000 40 years ago to maybe 15,000 that own the land. And we now see there's a lot more conflicts around the use of lands. I mean, we had a lot of smaller farms and we had a planning law that sort of was made to avoid conflicts. But now we have very big farms, so we have a lot of farm machines, a lot of manure, a lot of interference. How should we use the land for recreation, for carbon fixing? Should we leave the land for biodiversity? Should we have more, less or more forest? I mean, there's a lot of disputes around the farmland. You also have a smelling farm with egg production. Do you have any objections from your neighbors?
I thought that it would be the case because there was, I think, 1 year before I started was that in the south of Estonia, they were planning to do 300,000 or 1 million place farm, chicken place or farm, and the local people were very strongly against it. I thought that it may be the case the same with me, but I started this with the other way around, not saying that I'm going to do this and that's it, but I was firstly start to play with the idea publicly that, okay, I should do this and I'm moving back. And so the communication was the other way around. And I tried to soften it as possible, as much as possible. And now the local community is supporting me, mm-hmm. and they want that I would do well. Of course, if I would build a new and bigger farm, what would they say? I don't know. But still, I see that the communication with local people is the most important thing. You just can't go there and say that I'm going to do this, change your total environment here, and that's it. So this is not how the thing's going. But this discussion about the land and the structure of farms, this is also happening in Estonia, and I don't know where it leads. Maybe there is only in the future 3 or 4 big farms that will divide the Estonia, and that's it. So this will be very interesting and frightful thing to think about.
Yeah, just to comment, the structure of the farming in Estonia is going. I think the change is much faster than in Denmark. Actually, that we are kind of getting relatively bigger in Estonian size sense faster than it happening in Denmark, because we are still restructuring our structures, and then in this sense it's a very good example what Tanel has, that really the small farms which come back that they are very welcomed actually in a local community, because quite a lot of people still remember what the kind of local food was, because the big farms they are not considered anymore as a local, because usually the produce is carried away around once quite fast, and then you really don't know where it's processed and how it's coming back. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the real possibilities we have in the rural areas, and then the structural change also in the farming is happening, but also in other sectors, and I think that's one of these opportunities, and really to kind of draw on the sustainability trend which is in the cities and in the rural areas. It's something we can really work and try to cooperate with government and researchers and local governments and business people. Just to end the conversation, which we could probably have here for several hours more and more, because we have a lot of interesting possibilities and interesting ideas. But just to end with the last question and recommendation for our listeners, what is the first thing what we think that we all should start doing from today to enhance the possibilities of rural areas? Maybe to start from the Alberto.
Yeah, maybe not just more from my personal choices, but if we think what we can do collectively, there is many opportunities, and the drivers are many. They come from there is a momentum, you could say, from society that is demanding a different way, a different kind of economy, more sustainable economy. But this change in attitude, perhaps, from people is now being matched with the policy, and policy at the EU level and also globally is driving towards different kinds of production, different kinds of way we do things today towards a more circular way of producing and consuming. Now, the key is how to channel this process, because it's a transition process, so that it also produces benefits for different people, to not leave anyone behind. And now that we're talking about rural areas, how to ensure that development occurs in rural areas, it's very important. We can learn some very good examples in the Nordic countries where the role that that municipalities can play is much better, or work in the same team with companies, with academia, to find those opportunities, to ensure that there is added value into the what is produced in rural areas, which is often is just a primary production, but secondary production is already happening in the fringe of cities. So how to ensure that we add value into what the rural areas can provide, but also ensuring that those in those actions, we generate jobs locally. So people in those rural areas can have new opportunities and don't have to go away to find other opportunities. So again, just to finalize here, we are talking about emerging opportunities, and there are. We should be optimistic about these opportunities, but they are not just going to happen by art of magic, so to say. We need to understand the dynamic and what kind of governance models and what kind of collaboration models we need to implement to let this happen, to make this happen. So I will end that with that.
Thank you, Alberto. Karen, do you have something to add to that? What would you start to from today?
Okay, I can tell you three things. I think I totally agree with Alberto. Working together, collaboration, I think that's a new norm, because we have the circular economy and we have a lot of waste products, so we don't deal with, you know, we just produce, consume, and dispose anymore. We recycle everything. And you need to have different types of business to work together. And with that, it's not only about the material, it's all about people's thoughts, ideas, entrepreneurship, etc. So that's one thing. And here the municipality is key. The next thing I would say is to invite the urban people in. I mean, we've touched on it, and I think it's very important. And as you say, maybe we're going to get into a duality. We'll get some very big farms. In a way, I hope we can resist it, but we may. It's at least it's moving there, and then we have a lot of small farms that can show the good example, as you channel and invite the urban people in, because it's the first way that we want them. They also have a lot of resources and have a lot of skills. And the third thing is, be proud of your heritage. I would say, be proud of being rural, what you're doing. I mean, tell the story, tell the narrative.
Exactly. Thank you. Tanel, you have already made the step, but what do you suggest the others start doing?
Well, I think the simplest thing would be think of yourself in the future. Where do you see yourself in 5 years and 10 years? If you see yourself living in the city, or if you see a lot of people living in the city, then, of course, work on that. But if you still secretly wish that I would like to be in the middle of the nature, then start to think about it more, and you see how your actions are actually pushing you towards this goal or your vision. So, of course, I had last year this farm opened, what we have open farm days. I had more than 1,000 people visiting me during two days, so the interest is like immense, huge amounts of crowds going through this and being interested what's going on in the countryside, and I think these kind of initiatives are maybe helping to see people that cannot see that well. What is the countryside? What is the rural life? How is the food produced? And that is important. This kind of events we need to do in the future also, and maybe more and more.
Yes, I cannot agree more. I just had a question a little while ago in my work that we were discussing how to bring people more to the rural areas, and somebody was asking from me personally, but why are you living in city? I think for me this was a really question which I've been trying to find an answer for the last 2 weeks personally. So I think the same thing what Tanel said, that if you see yourself in a countryside in a few years, then start to ask the question, and then also the trend is going positive for the countryside. I think from our conversations today, we found out that we are all more or less positive on the trend going rural, and then the rural areas are getting more and more important and more popular, and therefore we just have to facilitate the need and the wishes what the people want, because our society is growing in this way on the kind of personal needs and desires and to enable the people's wishes to come true, and if they want to go to the countryside, then this is an opportunity which they can take, and we can also facilitate, and therefore it's more and more resilient rural areas what we have there. So to finish on that positive note, I really thank our panelists Karen, Alberto, and Tanel for participating in this roundtable. I hope we have a chance to discuss it some more. I also would like to thank the Nordic Council of Ministers for facilitating this podcast. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.